Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
And welcome back to the Callum McSwiggan Show. Today I am joined by the absolutely gorgeous, the stunning, it's Jack Guinness.
Good, I'm glad they can't see me, so you can just pretend that I'm gorgeous.
You are gorgeous.
Well, I had a night out last night. I'm not looking 100%. I feel great.
I wouldn't have known to look at you. You look fresh and ready.
That's my Irish gene.
Now, I want to talk about this because your surname is Guinness.
Yes, like, it is.
So what's the... There must be a lot of Irish hiding in there.
Yeah, there is. There's often a lot of Irish hiding in there. Arthur Guinness, so you know on the beer cans, there's a little schooly signature. He's my great-great-great-great-great-granddad.
I just thought it was like a fun name.
No.
But you are actually directly descendant.
Yeah,
from that's incredible. Do they give it you for free?
No,
do you like walk in the bar?
In Ireland, they do.
Okay.
In Ireland, it's really fun. But in England, if you go into Wetherspoons and go, "Hi, I'm Jack Guinness," they go, "Get the fuck out. We don't give a shit. That's £2.75, please."
I went to McSwiggan's in New York, and okay. I feel like McSwiggan is quite a rare name.
It is.
When I walked in, they ID'd me. And when I showed them my ID, they saw my surname. And they said, "Well, you can drink for free."
That's great.
Yeah, so McSwiggan's in New York.
McSwiggan's is quite hard to say if you have had a few Guinnesses.
It gets gets harder. It's really hard to introduce myself to boys on a night out for that very reason.
You don't introduce using your last name, do you?
No, that's weird.
Hello, Callum McSwiggan.
McSwiggan, pleased to meet you.
Look, I can already help you relationship-wise. Drop the last name when you introduce yourselves. That's the creepiest thing in the world.
I thought it was quirky.
It's too formal.
Okay, fair. Jack, let's talk about you and everything you do. So I feel like you're building yourself a little queer empire.
Oh, I love that.
Which I absolutely love.
So a quempire.
I'm not sure
that doesn't sound great.
Let's talk about the queer Bible.
Yes.
So you started this a few years ago, I think in 2017.
Yeah, good. You know better than I do. Yeah, it started because I was watching the Oscars, and it was the year when Sam Smith won an Oscar for Best Song, and they said that they were the first gay person to win an Oscar.
Yes.
And that turned out not to be true. And they got destroyed on Twitter and people being so mean to Sam.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, where do you go to find out that kind of history? Like, there isn't really a resource. So I looked online and all the websites were like, really, they looked like they were made in the 90s on like, you know, Microsoft Word clip art. And they were just really academic, really boring. They weren't engaging. And I was like, well, the LGBTQ+ community are the most creative, fabulous, brilliant people ever. So they need a space that looks and feels like that, that has the same energy. So I created the Queer Bible. So really simply, it's little essays where I ask my heroes to write about their heroes. And then I get an amazing young LGBTQ+ artist, illustrator, to do an original illustration with it. So it looks beautiful. It has a really lovely feel. And it's not about me at all. It's not about, you know, I've been a model for 10, 15 years now, and everything's about like me and selling stuff. And this is a space for other people. Yeah. It's a space for other people to tell their stories in their own voices. You know, I'm a privileged cis white man, a gay man, and I think those kinds of people have controlled the narrative a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And kind of said what's important and what isn't important. So this is an opportunity for me to create a framework to empower and enable other people to tell their stories, and then I step back. So it's, you know, I can do better in terms of diversity, but I'm really proud of the breadth of voices that we have on the site. And they're just, some of the essays are hilarious and will just make you wet yourself. Some of them make you cry your eyes out. Some of them are shocking. The essay on Robert Mapplethorpe, the amazing photographer, I tracked down one of his ex-boyfriends, and he wrote about the day when he got really wasted. He's about 17. He's beautiful. He went to the Chelsea Hotel. He met a young woman called Patti Smith and her boyfriend, Robert Mapplethorpe, and promptly steals Robert off Patti Smith. So if you don't know who Robert Mapplethorpe is, you're like, whoa, this is a fucking brilliant story. And if you do know who he is, you get this untold history, basically, that no one knows about. So that's the kind of gist of the Queer Bible.
I love that. And I think one thing you said there I really loved was that you know, you want to be better in terms of diversity.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, looking at the Queer Bible, I think you're already doing a tremendous job of, you know, having such a wide range of different voices. But the fact that you also would, you know, recognize that you can do better, because I think anyone can do better. It doesn't matter
100%
how much you're doing. I think there's always more people you can reach and more different voices.
The day when
you
stop
and
you're like, oh, I've done it now, you've messed up. And it's especially, I want people when they come in to when they go on the site to see people that are like them, that look like them, that have had the same experiences as them. Because I don't know what it's like to be a young trans kid in Brooklyn.
But
we've got that on the website.
Yeah.
And it's a space where I want people to feel safe, I want them to feel seen, and I want them to feel included.
Yeah. And educating people about their history as well, like you touched upon that a moment ago there. I think that's so important, again, because it's not something we ever really hear about. We certainly don't hear about it in school, etc.
I think a lot of it, 100% in school, it's criminal. But I think often the coming out, coming to terms with who you are, can be so traumatic that once you've done it, there's this energy of like not wanting to look back. You just want to look forward. You want to create a new life for yourself. You want to create a new identity. And I don't know. I think that when I came out, I found it really traumatic. I felt different to the very people you're supposed to feel closest to, your like friends and your family. And that can often send you on quite like a kind of a negative, self-destructive path.
Yeah.
And the great thing that history does is it connects you up to the people that have come before you. So I want kids to go on the website and I want them to be like, oh, not only should I not kill myself and feel completely alone, but I can walk down the street really proud knowing that I am descended from the most fabulous, beautiful, intelligent people that have ever walked the face of the planet.
Yeah.
So the Queer Bible was like my little gift to the queer community, being like, this is your history. These are your people. Like, you are one of, this is your new family, basically. So I want it to be empowering. And it's not heavy. Like, some of the stories are just, like, really, really funny.
Yeah.
But that's the main gist of it. It's about connecting us up to the past so we can be better and happier in the present.
I think it's a really special moment in every queer person's life where they kind of make that leap from that feeling of, like, I don't belong, yeah, and I feel weird and I feel strange, to suddenly realizing, no, actually, this is a gift and I'm part, yeah, of something really, really incredible.
Where was yours? Did you meet a group of people?
Yeah, I did. So for me, I finished regular school and I went on to, like, sixth form at a completely different place. And I went from a school where there was absolutely not a single out LGBT plus person.
Yeah.
And then I suddenly went to this new school and I took music there, and there was eight of us in my music,
great,
class.
The music class is the place to go,
gay,
isn't it?
Hi, we boys. All gay, every last one of us. And suddenly I was like, oh, wow, like, there are other people, and they all knew each other, they were all friends, and they were all extremely gay.
You're so lucky.
I was lucky to get that at 16, because some people, you know, they don't get that into their 20s, 30s, even later in life.
I ran away to New York when I was 17 and met a rather fun gang of people. And that was, and also I think because it wasn't London, I grew up in central London, and I think going to somewhere completely different made me feel like I could be completely different and be who I really wanted to be.
That's quite a leap at 17 to, yeah, run away to New York.
Yeah, I was a bit wild.
Yeah, no, I love that though.
But it was fun.
Yeah.
And plus the accent really helped me.
But I also understood, and maybe I have this wrong, that you didn't come out until later in life.
So I'd always been out to all my friends.
Yes.
And, you know, if you meet me, I can't really hide it. It's pretty obvious. But with my family and in the modelling industry, I wasn't. And especially in my career, it's weird because you think of the fashion industry as a super gay industry, and it is in many ways. But it also, now it's changed. It's in the last few years, really quickly, it's really accepted kind of gender diversity and non-binary. And,
yeah.
But then it wasn't so much like that. And I've got a beard, and the kind of clothes that I was selling and the kinds of brands I was working with wanted a very particular type of masculinity. They wanted quite like a heteronormative vibe. Mm. And because I looked like that anyway, I was encouraged basically by my agency to not talk about being gay, to, you know, slightly police my physicality and how I talk and stuff on shoot. So I'd go in and sound like a complete creep,
oh,
and be
really?
Like, hey,
yeah.
And that was horrible because it was like, you kind of come to terms with yourself and then you have to go back in the closet again. So that was a bit of a head fuck.
Yeah.
But now, weirdly, like when I came out and I did an interview with The Guardian when we launched the Queer Bible, and I came out and I was told, you know, you're going to lose some clients, you're going to lose some contracts, which is mad to think that
it
still
is,
happens.
Yeah.
But the first campaign I booked after I came out was a Levi's Pride campaign.
Oh, wow.
So I was the face of Levi's because I was gay.
Yes.
So instead of losing jobs, which was my fear, and maybe, you know, I should have come out earlier, and I think about that a lot, that I didn't. But now I am out. I'm really grateful that I get to represent our community.
I actually had no idea that this was something that existed in the modeling world, because I've heard of it happening in, you know, the world of sport, the world of music, where,
yeah,
people are encouraged to, you know, keep it quiet, not tell anybody. But I didn't know that went beyond into modeling, and I'm sure it goes again further into,
yeah,
other industries out there.
The acting industry is a big one. I remember, mm, I trained as an actor years ago, and I'd go and meet agents, and I'll never forget, one agent sat down and said, look, you've got two options for careers. You can be the leading man and you can be in the closet, or you can be gay and you'll be a character actor and play the best friend.
Mm.
And that was just so depressing to hear. And these are supposed to be the enlightened artistic industries. And I've got some gay friends that are actors, and some of them are out and some of them are in the closet. And it's interesting seeing their journeys. I think things are changing really quickly.
Yeah.
It does make me really, really proud. We've got some amazing people that are really at the forefront of changing things. And we've got brilliant TV shows like Pose and stuff that are,
yeah,
much more representative and inclusive.
So
things are changing. But also, I don't judge other people. Like, we're all on our journeys. Like, you need to do what's right for you at the time that's right for you as well. You know, if someone doesn't feel safe to come out for whatever reason.
Yeah, I absolutely never think that it's the individual's fault. I think we see a lot of unfair criticism thrown at people who stay in the closet for whatever reason. That's,
yeah,
that person's choice.
Exactly.
And they don't owe coming out to anyone, not a single soul do they owe that to. But my issue is with the industry as a whole and how it's creating an environment where that is the case. But it's also lovely to hear, you know, that you did publicly
come out and it's so positive, and I've been loving it. And now I've worked for a really long time in the fashion industry, and now I'm really excited about this kind of next phase of my career, which is kind of sharing queer stories and queer history.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, Jack. We're going to be playing some games very shortly.
Good, that's as heavy as I'm going to get, by the way. That all felt very low.
We've done the heavy bit.
Yeah, and then we do the teacher fun bit. Or something.
Let's have a little bit of music. This is number one fan, Muna.
So I heard the bad news. Nobody likes me, and I'm going to die alone in my bedroom. Looking at strangers on my telephone. Well, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you like if I believe those words I'm born to lose? I never try and I will never learn. But I've been looking at myself. Turn around like, oh my God, like, I'm your number one thing. So iconic, great, big, great, standard. How would I give my life just to hold your hand? I'm your number one fan. I'm your number one fan. So here's the bad news. I'm coming for everyone. Coming on strong, new hair and new shoes. Yeah, I get what I like because I do what I want. I've been looking at myself in the mirror saying, don't leave me now, don't leave me now. I've been looking at myself in the mirror saying, I won't leave me now. And I turn around like, oh my God, like, I'm your number one.
Are you ready for a game, Jack?
Yes.
Good answer. At the beginning of the show, you mentioned LGBT plus history.
Oh, no.
I thought we'd bring back one of our absolute favourite games. This is Queers Throughout the Years.
Love it.
And in this game, in front of me, I have five facts. And together, we're going to have to decipher which ones of these are true and which ones of these have been entirely fabricated. The terror in your eyes.
I know, I'm scared. Jack. Don't test me.
It's always a test.
At least they're not five facts about me. I'd be running out of the room if that was true. I'd be like, shit, my career's over.
Yeah, some of them are about you. Oh, no, they're not, I'm joking. shall we just dive right in
and
do this?
Yeah, let's jump in.
All right, okay. Our first fact or not fact is same-sex marriage was only legalised in Northern Ireland in the last week, but Northern Ireland was actually the first place in the UK to hold civil partnership ceremonies.
That's true.
Is it?
Yeah.
Can you walk me through why it's true? Because that's confused me a bit.
I can't. I'd love to say. I definitely know that they legalised gay marriage, but I remember reading in an article that they did have civil partnerships first. And I think because they're devolved basically in many ways, so I think that's why. But that does shock me as well, because it's taken them long enough.
I guess that makes sense, and I'm sure you're absolutely right.
I said it quite confidently,
and I just believed you.
There you go.
That was the kind of confidence you said it with. So when did we get civil partnerships here? I know it was 2017.
It was when Elton John got married, didn't he? He was the first one.
Yes.
And then I loved it. They got married in a really amazing posh registry office, but in all the press photos, there's a McDonald's in the background of all the
beautiful
photos, which I love.
Beautiful. Okay, I'm going to agree with you on this. I'm going to say this one is true, and the answer is... It is indeed true. The Civil Partnership Act was first voted in by the House of Commons in 2004. However, confusion regarding the interpretation of the act led to registrations being accepted from the 19th of December. This is a lot of dates.
Yeah, boring. Boring. So wait a minute. So it was a fuck up, basically. It was a fuck up.
Yeah, I think so. It was a mistake. And I know that there's been a few times.
I love that.
Where there's been little loopholes where laws and things have been changed. And the consequence of that has meant other things have changed as well. And many times.
God, all those right-wing religious people must have been livid.
Really pissed off about that, yeah. I think as well, which I failed to say, these are all Irish-based, even though you're not Irish, but your surname is...
I've got Irish blood
in me. You've got enough Irish in you.
I'm like a quarter Irish.
If you were American, you'd be telling everyone how Irish you were.
Yeah, I'd be a nightmare. I'd be wearing all green every day. It'd be awful.
All right, our second one is, Irish-born painter Francis Bacon was kicked out of his family home aged 15 after attending a fancy dress party dressed as a 1920s flapper with an Eton crop, beaded dress, lipstick, high heels, and a long cigarette holder. What's a 1920s flapper? That doesn't...
So a flapper is one of those, like, girls, like a kind of a, like a,
I feel
a
like
good time girl. Imagine like kind of a short skirt with beads doing the Charleston.
And one of those fun hat things.
No, not so much the hats. They had like short hair.
Oh, okay.
And they were all kind of, come on, Johnny, let's go dancing.
Sure.
Like all that kind of stuff.
Okay, yeah, I feel like I have a visualization.
We've got a picture of a flapper up.
That's what I meant by the hat.
No, yeah,
that's
but
the hat
no,
I meant.
But we've had a picture flash up, and it's not an actual flapper. It's like an Essex girl going to a Halloween party in a flapper costume.
This is like where you want a flapper costume and you get the cheapest one you can. You get this one
and
for $14.99.
A little hairband from Clothes Accessories. Shove a feather in it. Bingo. Come on, Kath, let's go.
So the Irish bond...
True.
It's true.
So Francis Bacon was a real... we've got an original real flapper popped up now. That's what a real one looks
right,
like.
Right, okay, beautiful.
But yeah, Francis Bacon was a wild, wild, wild man.
Yeah.
So I believe that.
I love that you know that you know your stuff. I'm really impressed.
Well, no, I'm just pretending.
Well, you're pretending very well. We are saying that this one is absolutely true.
Oh, no.
Oh, no,
it's
Jack.
False.
Oh, this is not played out
but
well
he was
for you.
Kicked out later that year following an incident in which his father found him admiring himself in front of a large mirror draped in his mother's underwear. We've all been there,
wow.
Francis.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, okay. And well, we've got...
So he was wild, but... He wore his mum's pants. That's pretty out there.
It's like you should get like a part of a point, I feel.
Thanks.
1.5 points. All right, next one. The first Irish LGBTQ+ protest march took place in Dublin in March 1983. It was organised by the Dublin Lesbian and Gay Collective in response to the release of the murderers of a gay man called Declan Flynn.
I'm gonna say true.
There's a lot of information there, and I feel like it would be weird to make that up and a bit morbid.
But those are the best lies. The best lies are when you give lots of information.
That's very, very true.
Yes, that sounds like it's true.
Yeah, I know that, you know, historically around the world there have been pride marches happening for decades before it's been legalized, so
yeah,
it would make
it's way post
sense.
Stonewall, so yeah
I think we are absolutely saying that this one is also true.
Oh.
False. Damn, this was the first large-scale march, but LGBT+ protests date back to the 1970s. Yeah, so there was protests happening way
before
then.
Who makes up a murder? Who made that one up?
I feel like the murder still happened, right? I think that definitely did still happen.
All right, okay.
It just wasn't the first protest.
I was going to say, quite a sick lie.
It would be very dark.
Freaks.
All right. Irish TV presenter Graham Norton once broke the world record for the most questions asked on a TV chat show.
Yeah, I'd believe
that. Yeah, that sounds like something Graham would do.
Yeah.
Yeah, good old Graham. We are saying that this one is...
I once went for dinner with Graham Norton.
Did you?
Yeah. And it was the funniest evening of my life. And I nearly died because he made me laugh so much.
Wow.
And you know when someone's really funny and then you like up your game? It was like I was the funniest I'd ever been for like 1 hour.
I love that for you. Because
I enjoyed it.
That does not happen to me. If I was in a room with Graham Norton, I would become the most unfunny I've ever been.
Do you know what? You wouldn't because he's so great.
It just makes you seem funny.
He like shines his light on you. And the funniest thing, I was wearing high-waisting trousers and a tight T-shirt, obviously. And when I got up to go to the bathroom, he was sipping his drink and he went to spit it out and he went, Jesus Christ, where are your organs?
Wow.
Because my ping was so tight. It was hilarious.
And how does one just casually have a dinner with...
It's a long story.
It's a long story, okay.
It's a long story.
what was the question again? Did he break the world record? He did indeed. It was broken in 2013 on Comic Relief. Well done, Graham.
And he raised over £1 million for charity.
Nailed it. Amazing. All right. Our last one is one of drag queen and gay rights activist Pandora Panty Bliss's first television roles was as Sean, the transvestite farmer.
That sounds very Irish.
That does sound very...
I love Panty Bliss. Have you seen the speech that she made for, I think it was for marriage equality
yes,
in Ireland?
It's one absolutely of, incredible.
It's Google like that, guys. Panty Bliss. It's
in like a
blowing.
Big theatre, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's the big Irish theatre in Dublin.
She's absolutely stunning. I had the pleasure of working with her on an HIV campaign as well recently.
Like?
An absolute trip. Hilarious.
Yeah.
But also so wonderfully kind to every single person she talks to. She's one of those people who makes you feel like the most important person in the room when she speaks to you.
Oh, that's good.
So yeah, what an icon and a legend.
Yeah, let's say True.
And I think True.
That sounds like such an Irish sitcom thing as well.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. We are saying that this is very much True.
Yeah.
It is indeed. That is what she did. okay, shall we do some more music?
Yes.
Yes, all right. Let's do a little bit of Rain, Ben Platt.
To someone who up and left you in pieces. I know the feeling, believe me. I know the prices you gotta pay. I'm sacrificing my freedom and all just to get somebody to see me. Nobody said it was easy. My heart's been broken and broken and broken. But I keep on hoping and hoping and hoping and hoping that if it keeps on breaking and breaking and breaking and breaking, then one day it'll open and open and open and open and open for you.
Hey, I know we've both been afraid, but we can't run from the wind and the thunder when we're dancing under the rain, the rain, the rain.
So, Jack, we're in a new decade.
Wow.
It's very exciting.
It is.
I thought we'd do a little thing where we talk about our favourite LGBT plus movies and artists and albums and things like that
it's
from
good to
the
take
past
stock,
decade.
Isn't it?
It is. And I feel like you even mentioned this previously. I think we've had such an amazing decade for like LGBT plus representation. I feel like suddenly we've LGBT plus artists and actors.
It's been a queer explosion.
We still need more, but it's a very good start.
Keep it coming.
So were there any movies or anything that stood out to you particularly?
Well, you're going to take the piss out of me.
Yeah, maybe.
So obvious. But Call Me By Your Name.
Yes.
I'm sorry, everyone. But it was brilliant just in its representation of like teenage love.
Absolutely.
Often we get like queer people get cheated out of that because there's no one to love. Maybe it's unrequited. So seeing that represented on screen in such a beautiful way, I found that lovely. And also the dad's speech that he gives is like, that's the speech every gay kid wants to hear from their parent, and we never get it. So I found that lovely. I loved that.
Me too. And I think what I really loved about that movie was the fact that it wasn't too rigid on like the identities of the characters.
No.
For instance, there was no like, oh, this person is gay, this person is bisexual.
It was just love.
It was just love, and it was very
and sex and shagging a peach.
And exactly. Oh, the peach. We all tweeted a peach emoji after we saw that movie. Don't deny.
Sent a few. I'm not going to lie, Callum.
I do. I think we all enjoy the
peach. It's my most used emoji.
That's because you're a gay man.
There you go.
It's the same for all of us. One that really stood out to me, and I feel like maybe it didn't get that much attention, was Carol.
Great.
And there was one specific moment in that movie that really, really stuck with me. And it's when the young lesbian woman is trying to figure out her identity. And she's talking to her partner, who is a man at the time, mm-hmm. and trying to explain the feeling of having same-sex attraction without having the language. She doesn't have the word lesbian.
Yeah.
And she's trying to explain it to him, and he's just not getting it. And I thought that was incredibly powerful, because there was a time before we have so many ways to kind of describe our identities and talk about our identities now, and words are so powerful and important. And it must have been really hard and scary we had that.
There's a lot of stuff on the Queer Bible when we're researching people from like some of them from like thousands of years ago, and the concept of a gay person is quite, as we understand it, is quite a modern concept. So it's quite hard researching some people, because you'd be like, oh yeah, they definitely had same-sex relationships, but they wouldn't identify quite as we would now.
Yeah.
And I think it's very powerful now to have the language to describe who you are accurately. And I feel like that with pronouns as well for our community
absolutely.
Like when people feel that language can adequately describe them, that's quite empowering. It makes you feel more like you.
And the singular use of they was the word of the decade.
I know, that was brilliant,
wasn't
it?
Which I thought was what a lovely nod to, what a lovely way to say, you know, we accept non-binary people.
Yeah,
to,
this is
to,
important.
To choose that
we see you.
Yeah, and to make it legitimate as well, because I feel like people still are seeing this as like a...
I think a lot of people don't understand it, and they don't understand the importance of it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm constantly... like learning from my community and asking questions, and like I think especially with pronouns, I've really noticed that if you show that you care and you're trying to get it right, like everyone messes up. But I've noticed with my friends that if I ask them questions and ask them to explain, they're more than happy to. And I think often they're just really happy that you're making an effort to get it.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't be scared of stuff like that. Just ask. Like, I don't know loads of stuff, and I'm always asking questions. And I often look stupid, and I don't mind that either.
Well, I feel like, again, that's all about like what the Queer Bible is about, you know? It's about learning together.
Learning together. God, it's not fucking Sesame Street.
Do you have any other movies, Jack?
Moonlight was amazing.
Moonlight, yeah,
seeing
absolutely.
Black gay love. We don't see enough of that on screen. And even though it's a TV show, I think Pose, I remember watching that and being like, I don't see this represented. This doesn't get shown in mainstream films or TV or anywhere. So I found that really empowering as well. And I think for young black people to see themselves represented is so important. So I love that. And it's just an incredible movie. I mean, regardless of what even it's about, it's just so beautifully made.
It's stunning to watch, yeah. And I also love that, you know, it was so critically acclaimed as well, because I think often things like that just aren't. They're overlooked. And this really wasn't. You know, it won a whole bunch of Oscars. It did exceptionally well, which is really amazing to see.
Did you watch Tangerine?
I don't think I've heard of that. What is
it's
that?
It's brilliant. It's all made on an iPhone.
Oh, okay.
It's really funny. It's about trans sex workers. It's heartbreaking and brilliant. And it's like a really cool indie film. And it's just very funny and brilliantly acted. Tangerine is my overlooked gem.
That sounds amazing. I will definitely,
there you go.
Definitely
stick
be looking
me,
that up.
Stick with me.
And what about music? I think for me, and again, I feel like this is such a basic, obvious answer to go for, Years and Years, and their first album, Communion, I just think they did something really special, and I think something really needed for the queer community and in terms of representation.
I mean, it's funny you mentioned them and used the word queer, because I feel like that's a queer artist. Years and Years are queer. Like, there's something about the visuals are so important, the costumes are so important, the dances are so important, and I've noticed, especially with like younger kids, that really speaks to them.
And
it's just fun. There's some bangers on that album.
And what I also really love, and I don't think this is talked about enough at all, is that I feel like it's a beautiful example of allyship, because Mikey and Emre, the other two members of the band, are straight men who have quite willingly and happily taken the back seat, let Ollie take the limelight as the front man, and, you know, make it and this explosion of queerness, and he can like
And they're just cool with it.
And they're so cool with it.
And he must come in and be like, right, guys, you're putting these outfits on. And they're like, oh, Ollie, not a get all right. Hot pants, fine.
Gold hot pants,
get
fine.
Them on.
Spray me with glitter, whatever you like.
Yeah, they're good pals.
Yeah, I really, really love. Are there any other artists for you that stood out?
I think just like the fact that there's so many to pick from now.
Yeah.
And that's the amazing thing. We keep talking about that things seem like they're shifting and really quickly. I think Mickey Blanco to me is someone that is amazing. And they have been so open and raw and honest about their transition, about their HIV, and open about it and speak really beautifully and powerfully and eloquently about that. And plus, I just love their music. Mickey Blanco's music is dark and sexy and brilliant. So that's kind of slightly different from Years and Years. I wouldn't put that in the car with my mum.
Crash. But again, I think that is so important in terms of representation, to, you know, different voices. You know, you mentioned HIV there. That's something so important and powerful to put into your
music. To destigmatize.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, I always look, like I was talking before about me not coming out as early as I wanted to in my career, and I look at people like Mickey and the fact that they are the first openly gay black rapper at that level, the first trans rapper from that community, and the first out HIV person and performer. And I look at people like that and I'm just like, you are so fucking brave. Like, I'm so inspired by you. And that kind of energy is just, that's what the queer community is famous for, being at the forefront of change and being at the front of the kind of barricades. And I look at people like that and I'm just like, wow, you're my hero, my queen.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I'd wish I'd had the foresight to actually have one of the artists we just mentioned.
Yeah, you completely messed up. That was
ready.
A massively missed opportunity there.
I mean, I could just say I love Hayley, can't even say her name, Hayley Kiyoko.
You don't even know her name.
But she does have some new music. So let's listen to that. That is She.
She works so much, she's never home. Her mind. regret. Gotta be a diva, have respect. Be that girl you can't forget. If you try to make it last, just stand up and bow that chest, hoping that she ain't a part of your life. Mystery.
Radio presents
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club.
We're joined in the studio now by Morgan McLean. So how did you get involved with Sunday Brunch?
We were up for a Time Out Award for Best Shop in Muswell Hill. Won the award and I was over the moon, drinking the free champagne like no one's business.
Sure.
I go up to the stage, I'm crying so much, I'm so drunk, like so drunk.
Yeah. Like, did you swear?
Yes, we're on television, like I was so nervous.
Yeah.
I got through the segment and Tim went like that on my arm, held my arm, was like, sorry about the swearing. And I was like, shit, did I fucking swear?
Did I fucking swear?
Nick and Nat's Fan Club. Every Friday from 12 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
It's time for my favourite part of the show. This is sex confessions.
Are these all yours?
These are all my confessions. No, they're not. These are from very lovely listeners who have sent these in, but we've taken away their names and any identifying features so that we can't
expose. God, they're so rude. I just looked at them. I'm much more prudish than I thought I was.
Are you blushing?
I'm a little bit
of flush in the cheeks.
I'm not reading the first one.
I'll read the first one. Okay, so our first one is... I get turned on like the flick of a switch when I'm hungover, but I'm just so drained from the sesh that I can't be bothered to ride that dick. Wow, graphic. What are your tips to overcome a hangover? I feel like this question at the end is not attached to... I'm very confused, but...
So I think what they're saying is that the will is there. The mind is willing, but the flesh is weak.
Yes,
that's the vibe. So I think we're being asked by someone that's very at home with their own needs and sexuality, which is great. They want some tips on how they can get themselves back in tip-top shape so they can ride that dick.
Yes, I get it. It's lovely, actually, in many ways. I'm on board now.
I think ride that dick is a quote from Shakespeare as well. I think it's Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
It's
lovely. I think it's actually one that recurs throughout a lot of Shakespeare's works.
Well, it's a great catchphrase. It's a great line. It reads, it scans beautifully. I think it was rideth that dick. Gorgeous
yeah,
stuff.
Classic
bit of
Shakespeare.
You've got a lot of classy listeners.
Oh, we do, yeah.
Love
it.
So my tips for hangover. I drink very responsibly because I have to go to so many events. So
yes.
That's one thing. I don't often get a hangover, but if I feel a bit tired, I think the go-to is a can of Coke.
Okay.
Settles the stomach.
Yeah.
I once heard that it has so much sugar in it that they have to put a chemical in it to make you not gag it back up.
Right.
So that same chemical is very useful on a hangover. And then McCoy's salt and vinegar crisps. Something about that crunch just seems to get me back in the mood.
Okay.
And then a pot noodle. And if you have a beef and tomato pot noodle, you'll be right as rain and ready to ride that dick.
I'm a fan of a McDonald's breakfast.
Ooh, I'm never up. You're up and up in time to get McDonald's breakfast.
No, yeah, but you can Deliveroo it now. You don't have to leave the house.
I wasn't even thinking about leaving the house. I'm just not awake.
You're such a freak.
You get up at like 9 in the morning on a hangover.
I do. I naturally wake at that time. I don't set an alarm.
It's so annoying. You're like one of these peppy, happy people, aren't you?
a little bit.
No,
yeah.
I'm roll out of bed about 6 o'clock onto the couch. And then maybe, me and my housemate, we... get shamed by our delivery driver because we'll order so much McDonald's for two people that often we'll shout back and go, guys, got the McDonald's. Becky, I got your McFlurry.
And it's only two of you there.
Just two of us, and we're both sat on the couch crying.
Beautiful. Okay, shall I read the next one, or would you like to read?
I can read this one.
Yeah, okay. This one's for you.
I went on a Grindr date last week, and the guy loved to roar like a lion when he came. Made him roar 3 times.
Well, congratulations on making
roar
that happen.
Like a lion.
Like an actual lion. Because I find that hard to believe.
How do they...
Yeah, like, I don't possess the vocal cords to make that kind of
noise.
To
me, that's a bit of a... I just don't want any thought of an animal. in the bedroom. You know, I don't want any kind of nods to cats or dogs or anything. I just,
you want a pure human,
I want a
experience.
Human, I want a human experience. That's what I want. So yeah, that's not even really a confession, is it? It's not a question. What is that? Just weird, isn't it? I'm not judging you.
I want to hear the roar, if I'm honest.
What I'm interested in is now he gonna, because you know how you catch something off someone, not catch something off someone, but like pick up something. Do you think maybe do you think now he's gonna roar like a lion and it's gonna be his thing?
Yes, I definitely, because that is a thing. I feel like I accidentally like collect fetishes sometimes.
Do you?
Well, because I'll meet somebody and they'll be like, oh, I'm into this thing, and I'm like, I've never heard of that before.
No, sure,
let's do it. And then next minute I'm like,
you can't get enough of it.
I'm like, okay, we have to do this every time now. Right. Passing it on to other people, then passing it around.
But then is there that danger that we all just get so weird and like as the years go on, like we're just like these insane freaks,
roaring
like dressed up like
lions.
A lion, swinging from the ceiling, pouring a pot noodle over yourself and cracking about like a fucking penguin. It's like, come on, guys, let's just take it back a bit.
Let's just go back to the roots. I don't know. I think swinging from the ceiling dressed as a lion with a pot noodle sounds great.
Do you know what? That sounds more like fun to me than sex.
Than sex.
Yeah, that sounds like a hobby.
But I think sometimes you can have like really sexy sex where it's like really sexually driven. And
right.
Then other times you can have that more like, I think this tends to come in relationships.
Bit of
so it's
a laugh.
A bit more playful. It's
yeah.
A bit funny. Laughing at each other, not at each other.
That's getting back into your weird fetishes
that's
there,
mean.
Isn't it?
That's just mean.
Give me another one.
Let's move on. In a recent sex ed class at school, our teacher was telling us about genitals.
Lovely word.
And it was split as male and female, but I'm non-binary, but they're not out. And when I asked if we could cover it, it got shut down. It hurt. Yeah, I mean, that's unbelievably
this
frustrating.
This makes me angry.
Tell us more about your anger.
So, one, I don't like that the student had to initiate it
yes.
and ask. We shouldn't have to ask for stuff like this, especially if you're not out and you're struggling and you're trying to work out who you are. It's not the student's responsibility to ask the teacher. It just makes me so mad.
Yeah.
To ask the teacher to explain stuff to them. This stuff should be in the syllabus and it should be packaged in a really caring, safe way and explained so people don't have to. I think this young person is so brave for even piping up and asking.
Oh my God,
like,
yeah.
Good for you. Don't let that shut down damage you.
Yeah.
Like, you're in the right. The internet is incredible. Go online and you can find out there are loads of amazing resources there. Places like Stonewall are brilliant and they actually train people to go into schools and do talks like this. So yeah, to the student, I love you lots. Keep on working out who you are. And I kind of just want to beat up the teacher.
I mean, beating them up is a bit...
I went there.
What I will say, though, is I feel like we do have this enormous overhang from Section 28.
Yes.
Because that was still a thing when
we were in school.
So Section 28
was that you weren't allowed to say that talk about homosexuality in any kind of positive terms. So it just didn't get mentioned at all. So that's what we had at school.
Yes. And I think the issue is that there are still teachers who were teaching then, who are teaching now, who, even though they know that they're able to, they were kind of stuck in this place for a long time where they weren't allowed to. And I'm not saying that it excuses them not doing it, but I understand why it might be difficult.
Well, I heard from teachers that even gay teachers that really wanted to talk about it and got so scared basically to mention it in any way because they didn't want to lose their jobs. I think they just got conditioned to be
yes,
like that.
Yes, absolutely.
So yeah, there's a kind of systematic issue there, isn't there, really?
There
and maybe this teacher just sounds like a twat.
Yeah, and I really, not that the...
I'm not condoning beating up teachers, by the way,
no,
that was a joke.
It was a joke,
it made me really angry.
And again, not that the responsibility should fall to the student, but I do just wonder, is there another teacher or a head teacher or something that the student may be able to talk to and have it addressed, because it needs to be addressed.
And I'd also maybe get in touch with Stonewall and see if they can come in and do a talk at your school, because I've
gone
on one of those and they are so amazing and they're brilliant at what they do.
They
get in touch with Stonewall.
All right, okay. Would you like to read another one?
Yeah, I'll do one more.
Okay, you can choose from these two.
I'm in my first male gay relationship, and I don't know if there are any other sex positions that I can do with my boyfriend other than me being behind him on top. Help, please.
So behind him on top, do they just mean... doggy, or do they mean
behind
like...
him.
Oh, I think maybe
behind
one of them lying
him.
Flat, and then one of them lying...
I've got it.
On top?
I've got it. Callum's doing a lovely thing with his hands right now.
I'm trying to demonstrate that.
That's weird. Don't like it. Stop.
There is a million different sex positions.
Is this a caveman? Have you not gone online? Like, if the internet has one thing, it's disgusting a myriad of insane pornography positions. Like, I'm not going to waste my time explaining sex positions to someone. When why are you even listening to this show? Just go online, stop listening to this radio show, and just watch porn.
But they may not want to watch porn, but there diagrams, there are books, there is a lot of information on this.
I'm sure there is a beautifully illustrated book for young gay people.
And also, I think, like, some of the fun of it, like, maybe you don't want an instruction book on
how to
have sex.
That's just a great idea. Callum, you're so much nicer than I am. That's a great idea. Explore together in the safety of your relationship and have fun with it.
Yeah.
And also, I think sometimes your bodies just kind of know what they want to do.
That's true.
And your body wants to do crazy things by the sound of it for all your fetishes. But you're like, just play around with each other. That's a much nicer thing to say.
Sorry for
shouting
instincts
at you and telling you to go look at porn. I'm such an arsehole.
Go and watch porn right now. It's interesting advice, is what I'll say.
Thanks, guys.
I think we have time for one last one. I love dating rich boys, but most of them have real fur coats. I'm making it my mission to educate them after we fuck. But where are you meeting all these rich boys in fur coats?
Okay, what I love, there's so many things I love about this question. One is, I love dating rich boys. Like, that's mad in itself. Like, come on. Like, why just pick rich boys? That's really full on. And then the idea that they were wearing fur coats.
All of them.
Brilliant.
It's absurd. I love
that. And then also I love that you only educate them after you have sex. Which is because you don't want to piss them off before.
You don't want them to leave.
And then you bring it up.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
I think it's perfect. I want to know where this person spends their time.
I want to hang out with this person. They sound fabulous.
They sound absolutely incredible.
But also real fur coats, really, nowadays? Who does that?
Yeah, I find that odd. And also, like, not even for like an ethical reason. I just think they're not very nice.
Oh, you don't care about the ethics. You're just like, I don't like the feel of them. Well, I do care about the ethics.
Care about the ethics in addition to...
You know what you could do? There's a great brand called Shrimps that make the most beautiful... I can't take my fashion hat off, can I? They make the most beautiful fake fur coats. So maybe after you copulate with them and then explain to them, you could send them in the direction of Shrimps.
Yeah, give them
options.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if they like the feel of the fur on their rich bodies, their rich, slaggy bodies, then maybe just replace it with a fake fur.
Yeah, I think...
God, I'm good, aren't I?
This is brilliant,
great.
Jack.
Why don't I have my own
brilliant
agony on
Jack
show?
I think that is also my... We've had some interesting confessions over the years, but I think this one might
like
just be my favourite. Yeah,
I think it's you, Callum.
Yes,
this has got you written
love
all
fucking
over it.
Rich boys in fur coats.
I'll go and get my fur.
Jack, this brings us to the end of the show. But I wanted to talk about your book that's coming out.
We are doing a queer Bible book, so I'm asking some of my heroes to write essays about their heroes, and it's coming out in 2021, which is quite a long time. But it's going to be brilliant, and I've been talking to a lot of people that I've grown up like loving, and I can't quite believe that some of them are involved. So I can't say who they are, but it's really exciting. We're going to make sure it's really diverse and talks to all different parts of our community. And so that's coming. The Queer Bible book is coming in 2021.
That's really, really exciting. And if people want to like know more about this or follow the journey to publication.
Follow at Queer Bible on Instagram and on Twitter. Follow me as well, just for a laugh. I take really moody pictures at Jack Guinness, and then do go on the Queer Bible website itself, because I'm very, very proud of that, and that's www.queerbible.com.
Amazing. Everybody should absolutely do that. Before I let you leave, though, I have one last question, and that is, you are supposedly the coolest man in Britain. Can you? I mean, I think you're pretty cool.
I did an interview with GQ, and that's how they, on the cover they wrote, is Jack Guinness really the coolest man in Britain? So they didn't obviously answer the question. The answer's obviously no. He's a loser. But all my friends, they're pretty mean to me anyway. Like, I can't really get away with anything, because a lot of the things I do are really teasable.
Yes.
I'm quite a teasable person. I set myself up a lot by being a twat. I didn't hear the end of that at all from any of my friends. So I'm not the coolest man in Britain, that's the answer to your question.
I think you're up there, though.
I'm
near
all
the top.
Right.
And you also recently became contributing editor for GQ.
Yes.
Just enormously exciting.
They
congratulations.
Gave me a title. Thank you very much. And I'm really proud to be representing our community in such a kind of important magazine, mainstream magazine.
Amazing. And also, I have some personal news that I need to share with our lovely listeners. And that is that this is actually going to be my last final show at FooBar. It's been absolutely incredible. I've had a wonderful time. So many incredible guests. We've done so many fun things here. So thank you all so much for listening. And also thank you to Abby, my producer, and all of our amazing team here. It has been amazing. I'm going to play us out with one final song. But I'm going to say thank you again to you, Jack.
And can I just say congratulations for doing this show. And it's so important that there are shows like this. And yeah, it's very inspiring. So on behalf of all your listeners and the community, thank you very, very much. And good luck with your next steps.
Oh, thank you, Jack.
My pleasure.
Was lovely. For my final song, I'm going to play a little bit of Heaven by Troye Sivan. See you later.
The truth runs wild like a tear down a cheek. Trying to save face and daddy heartbreak lying through my teeth. This voice inside has been eating at me. Trying to replace the love that I fake with what we both need. Truth runs wild like kids on concrete. Trying to sedate my mind in its cage and know what I see. A weak white eye, yeah, I'm screaming at me. Trying to keep faith and picture his face staring up at me. To me, how do I get to heaven without changing a part of me? How do I get to heaven? I paint and color me free. Without losing a piece of me.